The time now is 3 o'clock, and you're listening to a Juno Afternoon on KTOO for Wednesday, November 20th. I'm your host, Lisa Fu. We'll learn about Orca's ski and snowboard season. Eric Boris from Trail Mix will talk about this Saturday's dinner and auction. Edie Rodewald and Liz Weber will highlight Thursday's Great American Smokeout, and we'll find out about Rotaract's Christmas Dinner Box project. That, Writer's Almanac, music, and more, all on today's Juno Afternoon. First is National Native News.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. Montana's Little Shell Tribe of Chippewa Indians continues a long battle for recognition by the federal government. In the first of two stories, Montana Public Radio's Dan Boyce reports the tribe's optimistic the status will soon change.
Little Shell Chairman Gerald Gray says, in essence, his tribe has been looking for federal recognition for 130 years.
But technically, it's been about 35 plus years.
Recognition would allow the tribe to provide certain federal services to members.
Some education services, definitely health care. I mean, we could actually start our own Little Shell clinic, you know, housing needs.
And it's something the Little Shell already had. Chairman Gray says the tribe was recognized by the federal government in the year 2000. No substantive negative opposition was recorded at that time, but 9 years later, the Bureau of Indian Affairs changed its mind and took that decision back. The BIA brought forth a small list of reasons for taking away recognition, but Gray says Little Shell debunked each of them. Interior Secretary Sally Jewell has written a letter to Assistant Secretary of Indian Affairs Kevin Washburn, asking him to reconsider the tribe's application. Little Shell Chairman Gray says Washburn has the authority to officially recognize the tribe. He has until January to respond to Secretary Jewell's request to reconsider. The Bureau of Indian Affairs is also currently examining the process it uses to recognize tribes. For National Native News, I'm Dan Boyce in Helena, Montana.
Join us tomorrow as Dan tells us about the Montana Congressional Delegation support for the tribe in gaining the federal status. Native American women have the highest rates of smoking before, during, and after pregnancy than any other ethnic group in the nation. That's according to a new report from the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. Tristan Autone reports.
According to the CDC, 55% of Native American women smoked before pregnancy. During pregnancy, that rate dropped significantly to 26%. However, that rate was still the highest of any racial or ethnic group in the nation. Van Tong is an epidemiologist with the CDC's Division of Reproductive Health.
One out of two American Indian and Alaska Native women were smoking prior to pregnancy, and only half of these women quit smoking by the last trimester of pregnancy.
Tong says the reasons for these high rates aren't well understood, but that more outreach needed to be done to get women to stop smoking while pregnant. Smoking during pregnancy increases risks for complications, including lower birth weights and babies more prone to health issues once they're born. For National Native News, I'm Tristan Autone.
Leaders of the Cherokee Nation in Oklahoma say a banner used at a high school football game in Alabama demonstrates the need for better education on Native American history. As KGOU's Kurt Gortney reports, the display made light of a tragic time in U.S. and tribal relations.
The words on the large banner said, "Hey Indians, get ready to leave in a trail of tears, round two." Administrators of McAdory High School in McCalla, Alabama, and Jefferson County, Alabama school officials have apologized for the display shown during a Friday night football game. The sign recalled the United States government's forced removal of more than 15,000 Native Americans from the southeast to present-day Oklahoma in 1838 and 1839. Thousands died en route. Cherokee Nation Principal Chief Bill John Baker says he hopes the incident becomes a lesson for educators to teach about the Indian removal era and the resilience of tribes across the country. A statement from the high school principal said all social studies and history teachers will be reteaching and reviewing lessons about the Native American displacement following the Indian Removal Act of 1830. For National Native News, I'm Kurt Gortney in Oklahoma City.
Native American code talkers from tribes across the country were honored today in the nation's capital. Code talkers and families of those deceased were presented medals. The ceremony included remarks from lawmakers. In November 2012, Gmail unveiled its Cherokee language setting. The Cherokee Nation teamed up with Google to integrate the language in the email service. Gmail and Google Web Search both include a virtual keyboard for typing the Cherokee syllabary. The Oklahoma tribe said it was an opportunity to use technology to encourage everyday use of the language, especially among young people. This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kawanic Broadcast Corporation, with offices in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, and the Ford Foundation. Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
You're listening to a Juno Afternoon on KTOO. I'm Lisa Fu, and right now we have Lindsay Hallvik in the studio. Hi, Lindsay.
Hi, thanks for having me.
And you're here with Orca.
Correct.
Okay, so for our listening audience who might not know what Orca is, can you explain what it is?
Yeah, so ORCA stands for Outdoor Recreation and Community Access, and we're a recreation program that serves people with disabilities in the community and all of Southeast Alaska, and we're part of Southeast Alaska Independent Living, also known as SAIL, who offers a lot of different resources for people with disabilities in the community.
Okay, great. And how long have you been with ORCA?
So I've been with ORCA 5.5 years. Now this will be my 6th ski and snowboard season coming up.
And what's your role?
So I am the Juno team leader in the ORCA program, and we also have offices in Ketchikan, Sitka, and Haines.
Oh, great. Okay. And so today you're here to talk about the ski and snowboard season.
Yeah, that's right.
Okay, so when does that start?
So we start up our season January 4th this year, and then we'll run all the way to the end of the season mid-April.
Okay. And so there's a lot of preparation that needs to be done beforehand?
Yeah, exactly. So we're gearing up for the season with our equipment and things like that. But we also are recruiting volunteers now for our ski and snowboard program, but also our Nordic ski program. And in order to make our program possible and serving people with various disabilities up on the slopes, Eagle Crest, and the Nordic track, we depend on volunteer hours and just commitment and dedication, and we have a great community here that has supported us well in the past, and we're excited to be recruiting volunteers again this year.
How many volunteers do you need?
So we need as many as possible, but we usually have about 20, 30 volunteers at least that run the course of the season with a varying commitment by each person. Sometimes volunteer might come one day, or others might come every weekend.
Okay, so yeah, I was going to ask you about that. Whenever you talk about volunteers, what sort of time commitment is it, or what's involved?
Yeah, so basically we offer lessons every Saturday and Sunday, January through April, and we ask the volunteers either come for a half or a full day volunteering any one of those days throughout the season. And if they come a total of 3 half days, at least, then they can earn a Eagle Crest lift ticket to use at their own personal time.
Okay.
And also, we offer an opportunity to earn lessons, too, through Eagle Crest. So we have a great partnership with them, and it's great to be able to offer this to our volunteers who give us their service.
That sounds great. What do you have to do as a volunteer, though? I mean, I'm sure it's more than just showing up.
Yeah, I mean, it is... Half of the battle is showing up, and we definitely give our volunteers a lot of training. So first, you know, get in contact with us is the first way to start, and then we offer a couple of trainings throughout December and then also a little bit in January. And then what we ask from a volunteer is coming up to the mountain using their passion for skiing and snowboarding to kind of help these individuals that may not have access to it otherwise be able to access the mountain, and then give them just basic instruction techniques that we can help volunteers along with, but just help them get down the mountain safely and have a fun time.
And you guys have a volunteer information night coming up.
Yeah, so this Friday, November 22nd, from 4 to 6 at the new coffee and ice cream place near the Fendel Building called Copa. So we'll be there. It's just kind of a drop-in session that we're inviting people interested in volunteering to come by, find out what it's all about, fill out, you know, a volunteer info form, just emergency contact, that sort of stuff, and find out more about our upcoming trainings in December.
Okay, so this might be a silly question, but does a volunteer have to know how to ski and or snowboard?
So some proficiency skiing and snowboarding is required. However, you know, a lot of our skiers can be on the lower part of the mountain in the Porcupine beginner area, Eagle Crest, and so you don't need to be an expert skier by any means to help out.
So part of the volunteer training is this training that's coming up in December. Is that correct?
Yeah, so we have trainings for both new and returning ORCA volunteers coming up December 14th and 15th up at Eagle Crest. Most of it will be on the snow training, both partly disability awareness, partly some instruction techniques, things like that. And then December 21st, we're going to have a Nordic ski training, and that will be also at Eagle Crest, hopefully on the lower Nordic loop. And that's just a half-day training.
And this is training for adaptive ski and snowboarding. What is adaptive ski and snowboarding?
So basically, adaptive really just refers to taking traditional ski and snowboard lessons and just giving them adaptation to make it work for people that may have varying abilities, whether it be a physical disability, maybe they use a wheelchair and use a sit ski, or is somebody with a cognitive disability or traumatic brain injury, say, that need more assistance in processing the lesson format or whatever it may be.
So volunteers will learn how to help others.
Yeah, yeah, and it's a really fun group of people. It's a great community, and we have several volunteers that come back year after year and just love it, and even bond within each other. The volunteers kind of have their own community, too. Throughout the season, we have kind of après volunteer nights, we call them. We go down to the hangar and, you know, kind of create our own community about sharing our passion with others.
Did you start out as a volunteer?
I did.
And what I'm sure is very rewarding.
Yeah, it definitely is, because just like helping people get up to the slopes, have fun, is a huge reward.
And what was your initial impetus to volunteer for ORCA?
Well, I just grew up skiing. I always loved it. I felt like it was a very freeing experience, you know, to be out there with my peers and my family and recreating. And I just wanted to share that with other people, and especially those who may not have access to it otherwise or may find it a little bit out of reach, either, you know, physically or mentally. So I just thought it'd be a fun way to help out my community.
That's great. And you obviously, the volunteers, the ORCA participants, spend a lot of time at Eagle Crest.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm sure it's I actually haven't spent too much time there, but hopefully I will. But I'm sure you have a lot of partnerships with Eagle Crest.
Yes, and over the last several years, our partnership has only strengthened with Eagle Crest, and it's really exciting because the snow sports school up there has really come with open arms as far as integrating adaptive techniques into their own mainstream lessons up there and offering adaptive lessons as much as possible on the whole Eagle Crest side of things. So that's really exciting, and we're very much moving forward with, you know, the programs and services we can offer to people with disabilities in this community, and even with the new Eagle Crest Learning Center that's hopefully going to be going in this next year or so, the adaptive lessons and adaptive instruction is a big part of that whole plan, so that's really exciting too.
Okay, Lindsay, let's just go over details again. If for folks who are interested in volunteering for ORCA's ski and snowboard season, there is an information night coming up.
Yes, this Friday, November 22nd from 4 to 6. Just take a few minutes to drop in. We'll be there. Grab a cup of ice cream at Copa.
Okay, and people can call or go online and find out more about this program.
Yeah, definitely. Come on our website. It's sailinc.org. Or you can call us at the ORCA office at 586-0104.
Great. Lindsay, thank you so much for coming in.
Yeah, thank you.
So, folks, if you want to volunteer, it sounds like a really great program for ORCA ski and snowboard season. That's on November 22nd on Friday. And the training for adaptive ski and snowboard and Nordic training begins December 14th. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
And
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Wednesday, the 20th of November, 2013. It was on this date in 1820, a sperm whale attacked a whaling ship off the coast of South America. The ship was the Essex out of Nantucket. The captain, George Pollard Jr., just 29 years old, the youngest man to ever command a whaling ship. The Essex was a pretty old ship and rather small. She was headed for the whaling grounds off the west coast of South America when she ran into a squall, lost her topgallant sail, and nearly sank. When they finally arrived near the Galapagos Islands, they found the grounds nearly fished out, so they struck out for a new whaling ground thousands of miles off the coast, much farther from land than whalers usually like to go hunting. On the morning of the 20th, they ran into a pod of sperm whales, harpooned a couple of them, and then found themselves face to face with an enormous whale who was behaving strangely. The whale rammed the ship repeatedly, crushed the bow of the Essex, and swam off, never to be seen again. The ship sank, and the crew set off in some of the small whale boats. They headed for South America. By the time they arrived at the Pitcairn Islands, some of them had died of thirst. Their food ran out. Some of them resorted to cannibalism. By the time they were rescued, many of them had lost their minds. But Owen Chase survived, wrote an account of the event. It came out in 1821. 20 years later, his son met another seaman, Herman Melville, gave Melville a copy of his father's book. Melville read it, and it inspired his book, Moby Dick. And it's the birthday of the novelist Nadine Gordimer, born in Spring, South Africa, 1923. She grew up in a middle-class white community near a gold mine where all the black workers were forced to live in a windowless barracks guarded by police. Never thought about who those miners were or what their lives were like until she read a novel by Upton Sinclair, The Jungle. She moved into Johannesburg and started writing short stories, watched as many of her black friends were put under surveillance, arrested for treason. Nadine Gordimer, one of the few white novelists of her generation who did not go into exile, started to write about the South African political resistance in a series of novels, including The Late Bourgeois World, The Guest of Honor, The Conservationist. And for 60 years, she contributed short stories to The New Yorker magazine. In the short story, she said, "Contact is more like the flash of fireflies, in and out, now here, now there, in darkness. Short story writers see by the light of the flash." Here's a poem for today by William Blake, To the Evening Star. Thou fair-haired angel of the evening, now whilst the sun rests on the mountains, lights thy bright torch of love, thy radiant crown put on, and smile upon our evening bed, smile on our loves, and while thou drawest the blue curtains of the sky, scatter thy silver dew on every flower that shuts its sweet eyes in timely sleep. Let thy west wind sleep on the lake, speak silence with thy glimmering eyes, and wash the dusk with silver. Soon, full soon, dost thou withdraw, then the wolf rages wide, and the lion glares through the dun forest. The fleeces of our flocks are covered with thy sacred dew. Protect them with thine influence. To the Evening Star, a poem by William Blake. That's the Writer's Almanac, supported by the Poetry Foundation, publisher of Poetry Magazine, committed to discovering great poets and printing their verse. Back issues and subscriptions available at poetryfoundation.org. Engineered by Noah Smith, produced by Joy Biles. Be well, do good work, keep in touch.
That was Garrison Keillor with Writer's Almanac on a Juno Afternoon. I'm your host, Lisa Fu, and right now we have Eric Boris on the line from Trail Mix. Hi, Eric.
Hi. Thanks for having me.
So can you tell me what Trail Mix is?
Trail Mix is a nonprofit that was started 20 years ago to be the steward of Juno's trails. There's three different land management agencies that are in our general area: the Forest Service, there's the city, Parks and Rec, and there's Alaska State Parks. And 20 years ago, people realized that the Forest Service crew can't really go onto state parks land, and city can't really do the same thing. So they came up with Trail Mix, because we can go anywhere, and we have strong partnerships with all three agencies, and to work on as many trails as we can.
How are you involved with Trail Mix?
I'm the executive director. I used to be a foreman, but I got moved up, and now I sit in an office all day long.
And how many people are in Trail Mix?
During the summer, we have a crew of around 10 to 12, and then during the winter, it's just me.
Okay. And just this past year, it seems Trail Mix had a lot of highlights.
Yeah, we did. We worked on the Treadwell Ditch quite a bit. It's pretty easily navigable from from the Gaston Meadows Trail to the Blueberry Hills trailhead, and then we worked south of the Gaston Meadows Trail until we got to Paris Creek. We'll be putting a bridge over Paris Creek sometime in the future, a couple years from now. We've got some funding lined up for that. We also worked a lot on the Outer Point Trail, working with the city on that to make it the first truly wheelchair-accessible trail that will take you down to the water. We got frozen out. We have a little bit more to do, but we should get that done early next spring.
Wow. So will that be the first trail that's wheelchair accessible in Juneau?
There's other ones that are. The Under Thunder Trail is to a point, but this is the only one that will take you down to the water. Other than that, we're surrounded by this beautiful ocean, but short of going down a boat ramp, I can't really think of many places where you can get real close to it by going through nature. So,
what sort of the folks who are part of Trail Mix, they're professional people who work on trails?
The crew?
Yeah, the crew.
Yep. Well, they're got a couple of foremen that have been doing it for a while, know what they're doing, and then we bring in young adventurous people who want to work hard and don't mind getting rained on.
So what sort of equipment are you guys using?
Well, it depends on the trail. Sometimes they're using just regular hand tools, shovels, Pulaskis, rakes. And then for larger trails, like the Under Thunder Trail, we have some like a little mini dump truck that'll go, and then we have some power wheelbarrows for hauling gravel to mucky areas.
And the funding, where does that come from?
A variety of sources, pretty much by hook or by crook, anywhere we can get it. We get a lot of grants. We get contracts from various organizations. Just kind of wherever we can find it, we go for it.
And Juneau has a lot of trails. How many total are there?
You know, I should really know this. The number varies. It depends on how many little beach accesses you count. So I've been told there's somewhere between 80 and 100 if you count all those, but I've never sat down and counted them all myself, and I should, because I think Jeff Brown has asked me that same question before.
we have you on the phone to talk mm-hmm. about the Saturday's dinner and auction.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's our 20th anniversary dinner and auction, and it's going to be at Centennial Hall on Saturday, the 23rd. And you can buy tickets online at junotrails.org. You can buy them at the Jack, Rainy Retreat Books, and Hearthside Books. There'll be some at the door, but they might be limited, so people should buy them ahead of time.
And is there any special celebration for the 20th anniversary?
We're too busy to get anything really organized. Yep, this is our celebration for it.
And there's a dinner catered by the Baranoff.
Mm-hmm. And there's auction items. We've got a fly rod by John Lyman, and we've got 10 yards of D1 delivered from Miller Construction. What other fun ones are there? There's a lot of good flight scene tours and helicopter tours that are available if people have have visitors coming this summer. Yeah, we've got a lot of great stuff. The community really comes together and supports us when we have an auction. Everything's been donated by local people. It's great.
So you must know the trails pretty well here.
Fairly well.
Do you have a favorite one?
The Treadwell Ditch is by far my favorite. When I first moved here, it was 6 years ago, I was out for a wander and up, I forget which trail I headed up, but then found this ditch paralleling that trail, and I walked around it for a long way and didn't know anything about it and came back and researched it and found out that it was built to carry water from Crappie Lake up by Eagle Crest all the way to the Treadwell Mine District, and it just fascinated me. And I remember coming across all these washouts and these streams and wishing that there was a way to get across, and lo and behold, now I'm building bridges over them. So it came full circle.
Have you walked that whole trail before?
Mm-hmm. I have, and I've skied it in the winter. That's actually you can ski over a lot of the rougher areas. It's easier in a way, but yeah, I've tried. I've done it all in parts and all at once.
Okay, so it starts at one of the access points. It has many different access points, but one of the ends is at Eagle Crest or near Eagle Crest.
Yeah, where the Nordic loops are, Trail Mix put in a hardened trail. It'll connect you to the parking lot, the main parking lot there, and it'll take you down through the Nordic areas, and then across Fish Creek. There's a bridge there, and that connects you to the Treadwell Ditch. And then at the other end, it's the Mount Jumbo Trail, and it just kind of heads off from there. But we haven't made all those connections yet, so it can be tricky. And if you're sure-footed, you can make it.
Mm-hmm. And so, how long is that trail then?
I think 16 miles. I've never actually taken a wheel to it, but that's what I hear.
Okay. And how many times have you done that whole one?
Whole thing. I've probably done it four or five times now.
Great. Mm-hmm. Why are trails so important to Juneau?
Because we're surrounded by this beautiful forest, but it's pretty rugged going if you just head out into it. So it's a great way to get out, and you can get pretty claustrophobic if you're just downtown all the time. But if you can get out and see nature, it's good for the mind, good for the body, good for the spirit.
Okay. Thank you so much, Eric, for joining us today. Again, the 20th anniversary dinner and auction is Saturday at Centennial Hall, and doors open at 6 p.m.
Mm-hmm.
And tickets are still available.
They are.
Okay, thank you so much, Eric.
Thank you so much for having me.
I love to go a-wandering along the mountain trail, and as I go, I love to wander by the stream that dances in the sun. So joyously it calls to me, come join my happy song. Valerie, Valera, Valerie, Valera, Valerie, Valera. I wave my hat to all I meet, and they wave back to me. And blackbirds call so loud and sweet from every greenwood tree. Valerie, Valera, Valerie, Valera, Valerie, Valera. Thank you.
That's Bill Staines with The Happy Wanderer on A Juno Afternoon. I'm your host, Lisa Fu. And right now we have Edie Rodewald with the Juno Clean Air Coalition. Hi, Edie.
Hi.
Tomorrow is the Great American Smokeout.
Yes.
What is that?
Well, the Great American Smokeout is the day that we encourage people to stop smoking for a day. And if you're not a smoker, you probably know a smoker or love a smoker, and you can be a support person and help them quit for a day. This is a an event that started in the 70s, and it's been going strong since 1977.
So this is the 37th year that the American Cancer Society is doing it. How many years has Juno participated?
Good question. I don't know.
Okay.
But I can say that the Juno Clean Air Coalition has been around since 1995. So at least since, 1995.
Okay. And you talked about if you know a friend who does smoke, encouraging them to stop smoking for a day. How can you do that?
Well, that's hard, obviously. Ask them if they could tell you what would help them. Tell them you love them. You would like them to consider the possibility maybe of just stopping for a day, seeing, what it feels like, and that you will do whatever it takes to support them. I mean, that's one idea, that everybody's, going to be different.
And the premise is that if you can stop smoking for one day, maybe you can stop smoking for 2 days.
Yeah, it's one day at a time. But at least, every day is you're doing something for your health. We would, of course, like people to quit for a lifetime. And this is just, there's so much momentum, and that people like to join that, all that energy, and know that other people are quitting as well. There's even pins that you can wear that say, go easy on me, I'm quitting smoking for today, so that, because it can be very difficult, especially the first day. So if you can get through that day, chances are better.
Have you participated, not participated, or helped the Great American Smokeout before in this effort?
In the past, we've done things like, have booths at, in public places. And a couple of years ago, we were at the state office building. We handed out cold turkey sandwiches to anyone who wanted to sign a pledge and not smoke for the day. So that's a pretty common thing, is the cold turkey. And going cold turkey is just quitting without any assistance, from any kind of medication or nicotine replacement, which many people are able to quit that way. And we do encourage people to get support, because they're much more likely to be successful if they can also get some counseling and some nicotine replacement. So even though it works, there are, the more strategies you have in place, the more likely you'll be successful.
So getting people to quit smoking, is that the main goal of the Juno Clean Air Coalition?
Well, the mission is that we're dedicated to clean air that is free from secondhand smoke in all public places. So really, smoke-free public places do help people quit, because it makes it harder for them, less convenient, and the norm is changing. So the norm now is not to be around smoke. And what we know, ever since 1964, when the first Surgeon General's report came out, is that smoke has lots of toxic chemicals and poisons in it, and secondhand smoke is also very harmful to somebody who is breathing it and who is around it. So secondhand, we want to at least eliminate secondhand smoke from people who, in the workplaces and in public places.
Why did you want to get involved with the Clean Air Coalition?
Well, I'm a health educator. I have a strong passion for being healthy myself, and for helping other people that want to be healthy. And what we know about smokers is that most of them do want to quit. And so it's if they say they don't want to, sometimes it's because they don't believe they can. Mm-hmm. And then there's a few people that genuinely just really don't want to. But I think the majority of people want to and need support. And so these are some of the ways that we support people, are some of the smoke-free policies, or increasing taxes, so then making it more expensive, limiting cigarette promotions, advertisement. These kind of efforts have really been successful in the last few years. So, I'm very interested in prevention and helping people.
It does seem that in the past several years, great strides have been made in America and in Alaska with having public places become smoke-free. There are, of course, still people who smoke. Do you know any figures, or do you know how many smokers there are in Juneau?
Well, in Juneau, I can tell you in the state that about 1 in 5 smokers, and it's a little bit higher, 1 in 4 for tobacco users. And so there's other forms of tobacco like, spit tobacco or smokeless tobacco. But the different groups are much higher. So for Alaska Native people, it's more like almost 50% for tobacco use. So there's a discrepancy. We're a little bit higher than the national average of about 18%.
Okay.
So a little bit less than 1 in 5. But that's down substantially from, more than 50% of people used to smoke. You know, it was such a common, normal thing to see.
So it's great to encourage people to stop smoking for one day, and like you said, it's one day at a time. What are the resources available for people who do want to quit for a longer term or hopefully forever?
Well, there is a quit line, the Alaska Tobacco Quit Line. It's free. It's telephone counseling, and it's some nicotine replacement therapy as well. And that number is 1-800-QUIT-NOW. And right now that's the best resource that we have and for counseling and cessation. Most insurances now are also paying for nicotine replacement therapies. So we are working with doctors and, medical providers to talk with their patients who smoke and, one, screen them, advise them to quit if they are using, and then refer them and prescribe medication. Because that's, that's an opportunity that we have within our healthcare system to make improvements.
So you said there is nicotine substitute products. Are those things like the patch? What other things are available?
There's gum. There's lozenges. There's Shantix, which is more of a medication. And, not everything works for everyone. And so I think there's an inhaler as well. Sometimes you have to try more than one thing to see what's going to work. And it should be prescribed, because depending on the level that the smoker has been using tobacco will depend on, how strong of a dosage that they will need of the nicotine replacement.
Oh, okay. So most of the stuff is prescription. It's not over-the-counter?
Well, I mean, it's a lot of it's over-the-counter.
Okay.
But it's nice to work with a medical provider so that you can get the correct dosage and have someone help you with it.
Okay, and then you had mentioned a quit line. Are there local resources for people to walk into, or?
Not at the moment.
Okay.
not at the moment. The search used to have a cessation counselor, but that is not funded at this time.
So have you ever smoked?
I played around in college, I can say, but I never stuck to me, so that was a good thing for me.
And do you have friends or family members who smoke?
I do. It's hard to be around my brother and his wife because they are, third-hand smoke, and you can't even get close to their car because they smoke in their car. But it's very hard because they're very defensive. Sometimes it's easier for me to talk to people I don't know than to talk to my own family. And I know that's true for a lot of people, but just keep telling them that you love them and you would like them to, that it's not too late for them to improve their health.
Do you have someone in mind that tomorrow you're going to help encourage them?
Yes, I do, and that would be my brother and his wife.
Okay.
Yeah.
So tomorrow is the Great American Smokeout, and Juno Clean Air Coalition and Edie is with them. You guys are encouraging people to wake up tomorrow morning, don't reach for the cigarette.
Hide the ashtrays, get rid of the cigarette packages, and make it a day where you become a better breather.
That's great, a day of becoming a better breather. And it really it could just be an experiment. Just try it out, see how it feels, right?
Yeah.
Okay, is there anything else you want to add?
I just want to say that the Juno Clean Air Coalition is open to community membership. If anybody's interested, we meet on the third Monday of the month at NCAD. That's National Council on Drug and Other Drugs and Alcohol Use. third Monday. And if you are interested, we have a website, junocleanair.org. You can get information there.
Thank you so much, Edie, for coming in.
Thank you.
Tomorrow is the Great American Smokeout.
Now, I'm a fellow with a heart of gold, with the ways of a gentleman, I've been told. The kind of a guy that wouldn't even harm a flea. But if me and a certain character ever met, the guy that invented the cigarette, I'd murder that son of a gun in the first degree. Well, it ain't because I don't smoke myself. I don't reckon they hinder your health, for I smoked them half my life, and I ain't dead yet. But nicotine slaves are all the same at a petting party or poker game. Everything's got to stop while I have a cigarette.
Smoke, smoke, smoke that cigarette. Puff, puff, puff it if you smoke yourself to death.
Now thank Peter at the Golden Gate. Don't you hate to make him wait. You just gotta have another cigarette. Of chance the other night, old Dame Fortune was doing me right. The kings and the queens, it just kept coming round. I caught a full and I bet him high, but my bluff didn't work on this certain guy, cause he just kept laying that money down. He'd raise me and I'd raise him. Sweated blood, got a sink or swim, but he finally called and he didn't raise the bet. I said, Ace is full, pal, how about you? He said, I'll tell you in a minute or two, but right now I just gotta have a cigarette.
Smoke, smoke, smoke that cigarette. Puff, puff, puff it if you smoke yourself to death.
Tell St. Peter at the Golden Gate that you haste to make him wait. You just gotta have another cigarette. Night then I had a date with the cutest little gal. She sure did rate. She was a hybrid, uptown, fancy little thing. She said she loved me, and it seemed to me that things just about like they ought to be. So hand in hand we went walking right down Lover's Lane. She was oh so far from a chunk of ice, and our smooching party was going real nice. And so help me, Michael, I think I might have been there yet. But I gave her a kiss and a little squeeze, and she says, "How can you excuse me, please, and I'm just bound to have another cigarette." Ruined my vanity.
Smoke, smoke, smoke that cigarette. Puff, puff, puff it if you smoke yourself to death.
Tell St. Peter and the Golden King that you hate to make him wait, but you just gotta have another cigarette.
That was Smoke, Smoke, Smoke by Doc and Merle Watson in honor of the Great American Smokeout, which is taking place tomorrow. You're listening to A Juno Afternoon. I'm your host, Lisa Fu. And right now we have Chelsea Gagnon on the line. Hi, Chelsea.
Hi, Lisa.
Welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
So you are part of the Capital City Rotor Act.
Yes. We are a group of 18 to 30-year-old young professionals in town that do a lot of community service type of activities and have a little fun on the side.
How often do you guys meet up?
We meet every Wednesday at 6. Right now we're working on a pretty big project, so we're meeting twice a week. But you can check our website and our Facebook. We update that every week to say exactly what we're doing and where we're going to be.
And is becoming part of Rotor Act, do people go to meetings every week? Is that the commitment level you guys are looking for?
It's certainly what we're looking for. But, you know, we all have lives and jobs, other things to focus on that are, sometimes more important. So we like to have as many people as possible, of course, but we are also really accepting of the fact that we're not the most important thing.
And how many members do you have in the Rotor Act?
Right now we have probably 6 that kind of come and go. The summertime is often harder to find people because everyone's so busy. So it's starting to pick up a little more now that we're into November. It's a small club, but we do what we can.
And how long have you been in Rotor Act?
I am going on my second year. I I'm kind of from the area, but I just moved back to Juneau about a year and a half ago. So my roommate suckered me into it, and I'm still here.
What inspired you to join? I guess your roommate did.
Yeah, pretty much. Rotaract is actually a younger version of Rotary, and I was a Rotary exchange student at one point. So I kind of knew about the existence of Rotaract, but my roommate was the president when I moved here, so she talked me into coming.
So the big project that you're working on, is that the Christmas Dinner Box project?
That is, yeah. And this will be, I think, the seventh year that we're doing that. We took it over from Rachel McLeod, who started it, I think, like maybe 15 years ago or something. It's been going on for quite a while. And we collect price mashers and donations from around town. We've got boxes at the Nugget Mall, at Super Bear, of course, and the Jordan Creek Mall. We've got some at Pavitt's Health and Fitness. So we collect price mashers, and Super Bear lets us use as many of those as we can collect, which is awesome. We put it towards the cost of 200 Christmas dinners for local needy families.
So it's 200 boxes that's filled with different food items for a big holiday meal?
Yeah, pretty much. So, you know, there's a turkey, of course, and then potatoes and onions, and there's usually some kind of dessert item and cranberry sauce and everything that you would need for your typical holiday dinner.
Is 200 boxes the normal need that you guys do?
We've been doing that for the Rotaract Club. I know when Rachel McLeod first started it, I think it was like 350 boxes. Which is amazing. I don't know how one person could pull all that off when there's six of us and it's a challenge. But 200 is usually what we can handle.
So do you need more volunteers to help out with this effort? Do you just need community donations? What are you guys hoping for?
We need everything, basically. Even if you just want to drive a little farther and shop at Super Bear, that is a great help to us. On, I think, December 17th, we will be packing all those boxes with the food from Super Bear. I think last year we did it in like 17 minutes or something to pack 200 boxes. It's kind of a race. We have fun with it. look us up on Facebook and we'll have updates about when that's going to happen. Or right now we're decorating the boxes, folding them, and putting wrapping paper, and we can always use help with that.
So how can people volunteer for packing the boxes or decorating them, or even how they could go about donating stuff?
Sure. Well, we have all the donation boxes around town that I mentioned. They can give me a call at 957-8786. They can look us up on Facebook. They can contact any Rotarian in town, can get a hold of us as well. I think we're pretty accessible.
What are price smashers? You've been mentioning Super Bear price smashers, and for just those who might not know what those are, what is that?
Sure, a price smasher is kind of like a Freddy's Rewards Point, but for Super Bear. So. It's a little kind of a coupon, and you spend so much, you get so many price smashers, and then you can put those towards whatever items happen to be on sale or, specific deals. I know around Thanksgiving they have turkey smashers that you can use specifically towards a turkey, so it's kind of a coupon.
Okay, and you guys are filling up the boxes, you said December 17th?
Yes, that's the plan at the moment.
And how are these boxes distributed?
We have in the past been working with Northland Services. I believe this year we're working with Samson Tug, and they have taken over the Northland Services building. So they refrigerate the food for us. They deliver the food around town. We we generally drop it off at like Catholic Community Services, the Glory Hole, a few other places in town that then they can more directly distribute it to people they know definitely need it. But this year it should be Sampson Tug that's going to be pulling all the heavy weight for us.
Oh, that's great. And is that a volunteer service that they provide?
It is, yeah. Western Auto donates all the boxes. And like I said, Super Bear is very generous with their time and donations. And then Sampson Tug will be doing the delivery and hauling of all the heavy stuff. So we have some great community support for this project.
This is a great way to become involved with RotoRact, it seems, if people haven't been doing it before. What are some other projects that RotoRact does?
Well, in the past, we have a chili fest every year, and that all those funds go to Shelter Box, which people may be particularly interested in at the moment because of all the typhoon in the Philippines. It's a box, basically, that has a tent and a stove and blankets and food and everything that you need to survive all in one box. So that's a big Rotary project, but RotoRact is generally able to buy one shelter box every year that goes to a country in need. We often donate to Cancer Connection. Every year we have a fundraiser for them. We've done fundraisers for KXLL in the past, and we do a lot of volunteering around town, just little projects. People can get a hold of us if they need help with pretty much anything.
Great. Chelsea, it's so great talking to you about RotoRact's Christmas Dinner Box project. It seems people should go to Super Bear, start shopping, get those price smashers, fill up those donation boxes, and get in contact with you if they want to volunteer.
Yes. Yes, that would be awesome. We love any help we can get.
Okay, anything else you want to let everybody know?
No, I think that's about it. Just look for the boxes around town, and thanks so much for getting in the holiday spirit.
Thanks, Chelsea. That's Chelsea Gagnon with the RotoRact Club talking about the Christmas Dinner Box project.
Thank you, Lisa.
You're listening to a Juno Afternoon on KTOO. Tonight, KRNN presents Blues by Association at the Goldtown Theater tonight, Wednesday at, that's tonight, 7 p.m. And I just want to give you a little preview. This was recorded from their Sunday night rehearsal, recorded by Sister Grace, the blues goddess.
Told me just the other day that I'm the lucky one. Heart full of sun,
If you like what you're hearing, come to tonight's concert at 7 p.m. at the Gold Town Theater, Blues by Association, as part of the KRNN Spotlight Music Series. This is KTOO Juno. We rebroadcast on translators K276 AF in the Mendenhall Valley and Auk Bay, K269 AO in Lemon and Schweitzer Creek, K201 AM in Gustavus, K220 BT in Hoonah, and K210 AS in Excursion Inlet and Icy Strait. In Juneau, KTOO is on GCI Cable on digital channel 871. We're also online at ktoo.org. Support for national programming on KTOO comes from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting and listeners like you. For tomorrow, Juneau afternoon, Shona Strausser will be hosting. We'll get the details about Saturday's Seafood KTOO fundraiser, Forks, Corks, and Kegs. William Todd Hunt will offer a preview of this weekend's Amaga Chamber Orchestra performances. We'll highlight this Sunday's Skate City at Centennial Hall. We'll get a preview of Saturday afternoons of storytelling for a children event. And Nancy DeTourney will be here for Arts Up. All that, Writer's Almanac, music, and more on tomorrow's Juno Afternoon.
Well, the bluebird told me the other day that I'm a lucky one. Oh, with a heart full of sun, yeah. And I know that I'm the lucky one. Whoa, yeah.
That there are substantial benefits for low-income adults who enroll in Medicaid relative to being uninsured.
Enrollment in private insurance